Chapter 31. The Indian Camp, the sortie from the fort. Headquarters, Marilla, October 3, 1838. It is a balmy night. I hear the merry jingle of the tambourine, and the cheery voices of the girls and peasants, as they dance beneath my casement, under the shadow of the clustering vines. The laugh and song pass gaily round, and even at this distance I can distinguish the elegant form of Ramon Cabrera, as he whispers gay nothings in the ears of the Andalusian girls, or joins in the thrilling chorus of Rigo's hymn, which is ever and anon vociferated by the enthusiastic soldiery of Carlos Quinto. I am alone, in the most inaccessible and most bomb-proof tower of our little fortalice. The large casements are open to the wind, as it enters, whispers in my ear its odorous recollections of the orange grove and the myrtle bower. My torch, a branch of the fragrant cedar tree, flares and flickers in the midnight breeze, and disperses its scent and burning splinters on my scroll and the desk, where I write meat implements for a soldier's authorship. It is cartridge paper over which my pen runs so glibly, and a yawning barrel of gunpowder forms my rough writing table. Around me, below me, above me, all is peace. I think, as I sit here so lonely, on my country, England, and muse over the sweet and bitter recollections of my early days. Let me resume my narrative, at the point where, interrupted by the authoritative summons of war, I paused on the last occasion. I left off, I think, for I am 1,000 miles away from proof sheets as I write, and, were I not writing the simple truth, must contradict myself 1,000 times in the course of my tale, I think, I say, that I left off at that period of my story, when, Holker being before Fudiger, and I in command of that fortress, I had just been compelled to make away with his messenger, and, dressed in the fallen Indian's accoutrements, went forth to reconnoiter the force, and, if possible, to learn the intentions of the enemy. However much my figure might have resembled that of the Python, and, disguised in his armor, might have deceived the lynx-eyed Marathas, into whose camp I was about to plunge, it was evident that a single glance at my fair face and auburn beard would have undeceived the dullest blockhead in Holker's army. Seizing, then, a bottle of Burgess's walnut catsup, I dyed my face and my hands, and, with the simple aid of a flask of Warren's jet, I made my hair and beard as black as ebony. The Indian's helmet and chain hood covered likewise a great part of my face, and I hoped thus, with luck, impudence, and a complete command of all the Eastern dialects and languages, from Burma to Afghanistan, to pass scot-free through this somewhat dangerous ordeal. I had not the word of the night, it is true, but I trusted to good fortune for that, and passed boldly out of the fortress, bearing the flag of truce as before. I had scarcely passed on a couple of hundred yards, when lo! A party of Indian horsemen, armed like him, I had just overcome, trotted towards me. One was leading a noble white charger, and no sooner did he see me than, dismounting from his own horse, and giving the rein to a companion, he advanced to meet me with the charger. A second fellow likewise dismounted, and followed the first. One held the bridle of the horse, while the other, with a multitude of salams, alaikums, and other genuflections, held the jeweled stirrup, and kneeling, waited until I should mount. I took the hint at once. The Indian who had come up to the fort was a great man, that was evident. I walked on with a majestic air, gathered up the velvet reins, and sprung into the magnificent high-peaked saddle. "Uck, buck," said one. "Tea is good. In the name of the 49 Imams, let us ride on." And the whole party set off at a brisk trot, I keeping silence, and thinking with no little trepidation, of what I was about to encounter. As we rode along, I heard two of the men commenting upon my unusual silence, for I suppose, that is, the Indian was a talkative officer. "The lips of the Bahadur are closed," said one. "Here are those birds of paradise, his long-tailed words. They are imprisoned between the golden bars of his teeth." "Cush," said his companion, "be quiet. Babaji Bahadura seen the dreadful Ferengi, Gatagan Kongaj Puli, the elephant lord, whose sword reaps the harvest of death. There is but one champion who can wear the papooshes of the elephant, slayer this Babaji Bahadur. You speak truly, Puniri Mukhan, the Bahadur ruminates on the words of the unbeliever. He is an ostrich, and hatches the eggs of his thoughts. Bekism, on my nose be it. May the young birds, his actions, be strong and swift in flight. May they digest iron, said Puniri Mukhan, who was evidently a wag in his way. Oh, oh, thought I, as suddenly the light flashed upon me. He was, then, the famous Babaji Bahadur, whom I overcame just now. And he is the man destined to stand in my slippers, is he? And I was at that very moment standing in his own. Such are the chances and changes that fall to the lot of the soldier. I suppose everybody who has been in India, at least has heard the name of Babaji Bahadur. It is derived from the two Hindustani words Babaji, General, Bahadur, Artilleryman. He had entered into Holkar's service in the latter capacity, and had, by his merit and his undaunted bravery in action, attained the dignity of the peacock's feather, which is only granted to noblemen of the first class. He was married, moreover, to one of Holkar's innumerable daughters. A match which, according to the Chronique Scandalous, brought more of honor than of pleasure to the poor Babaji. Gallant as he was in the field, it was said that in the harem he was the veriest craven alive, completely subjugated by his ugly and odious wife. In all matters of importance the late Bahadur had been consulted by his prince, who had, as it appears, knowing my character, and not caring to do anything rash in his attack upon so formidable an enemy, sent forward the unfortunate Python to reconnoiter the fort. He was to have done yet more, as I learned from the attendant Puniri Mukhan, who was, I soon found out, an old favorite with the Babaji doubtless on account of his honesty and love of repartee. The Bahadur's lips are closed, said he, at last, trotting up to me. Has he not a word for old Puniri Mukhan? Bismillah, Mashallah, Barakallah, said I, which means, my good friend, what I have seen is not worth the trouble of relation, and fills my bosom with the darkest forebodings. You could not then see the Gujpadi alone, and stab him with your dagger? Here was a pretty conspiracy. Oh, I saw him, but not alone. His people were always with him. Hurumzada, it is a pity. We waited but the sound of your jagri whistle, and straightway would have galloped up and seized upon every man, woman, and child in the fort. However, there are but a dozen men in the garrison, and they have not provision for 2 days they must yield, and then hurrah for the moon faces. Mashallah! I am told the soldiers who first get in are to have their pick. How my old woman, Roti Mukhan, will be surprised when I bring home a couple of Ferengi wives, ha, ha. Fool, said I, be still. 12 men in the garrison. There are 1,200. Gahagan himself is as good as 1,000 men. And as for food, I saw with my own eyes 500 bullocks grazing in the courtyard as I entered. This was a bouncer, I confess. But my object was to deceive Puniri Mukhan, and give him as high a notion as possible of the capabilities of defense which the besieged had. Pooch, pooch, murmured the man. It is a wonder of a fortress. We shall never be able to take it until our guns come up. There was hope then. They had no battering train. Ere this arrived, I trusted that Lord Lake would hear of our plight, and march down to rescue us. Thus occupied in thought and conversation, we rode on until the advanced sentinel challenged us, when old Puniri gave the word, and we passed on into the center of Holkar's camp. It was a strange, a stirring sight. The campfires were lighted, and round them eating, reposing, talking, looking at the merry steps of the dancing girls, or listening to the stories of some Dolbot or Indian improvisator, were thousands of dusky soldiery. The camels and horses were picketed under the banyan trees, on which the ripe mango fruit was growing, and offered them an excellent food. towards the spot which the golden fish and royal purtas, floating in the wind, designated as the tent of Holker, led an immense avenue of elephants, the finest street, indeed, I ever saw. Each of the monstrous animals had a castle on its back, armed with Mauritanian archers and the celebrated Persian matchlock men. It was the feeding time of these royal brutes, and the grooms were observed bringing immense toffings, or baskets, filled with pineapples, plantains, bandanas, Indian corn, and cocoa nuts, which grow luxuriantly at all seasons of the year. We passed down this extraordinary avenue no less than 388 tails did I count on each side, each tail appertaining to an elephant 25 feet high, each elephant having a two-storied castle on its back, each castle containing sleeping and eating rooms for the 12 men that formed its garrison, and were keeping watch on the roof, each roof bearing a flagstaff 20 feet long on its top, the crescent glittering with 1,000 gems, and round it the imperial standard, each standard of silk velvet and cloth of gold, bearing the well-known device of Holker, argent and argules, between a sinople of the first, a chevron, truncated, wavy. I took 9 of these myself in the course of a very short time after, and shall be happy, when I come to England, to show them to any gentleman who has a curiosity that way. Through this gorgeous scene our little cavalcade passed, and at last we arrived at the quarters occupied by Holker. That celebrated chieftain's tents and followers were gathered round one of the British bungalows which had escaped the flames, and which he occupied during the siege. When I entered the large room where he sat, I found him in the midst of a council of war, his chief generals and viziers seated round him, each smoking his hookah, as is the common way with these black fellows, before, at, and after breakfast, dinner, supper, and bedtime. There was such a cloud raised by their smoke you could hardly see a yard before you. Another piece of good luck for me, as it diminished the chances of my detection. When, with the ordinary ceremonies, the Khidmatgars and Khansamas had explained to the prince that Babaji Bahadur, the right eye of the Son of the Universe, as the ignorant heathens called me, had arrived from his mission, Holker immediately summoned me to the maidan, or elevated platform, on which he was seated in a luxurious easy chair, and I, instantly taking off my slippers, falling on my knees, and beating my head against the ground 99 times, proceeded, still on my knees, 120 feet through the room, and then up the 20 steps which led to his maidan. A silly, painful, and disgusting ceremony, which can only be considered as a relic of barbarian darkness, which tears the knees and shins to pieces, let alone the pantaloons. I recommend anybody who goes to India, with the prospect of entering the service of the native rajas, to recollect my advice, and have them well wadded. Well, the right eye of the Son of the Universe scrambled as well as he could up the steps of the maidan, on which in rows, smoking, as I have said, the musnads or general officers were seated, and I arrived within speaking distance of Holker, who instantly asked me the success of my mission. The impetuous old man thereon poured out a multitude of questions: how many men are there in the fort? Said he, how many women? Is it victualled? Have they ammunition? Did you see Gahagan Sahib, the commander? Did you kill him? All these questions Jeswant Row Holker puffed out with so many whiffs of tobacco. Taking a chill myself, and raising about me such a cloud that, upon my honor as a gentleman, no man at 3 yards distance could perceive anything of me except the pillar of smoke in which I was encompassed, I told Holker, in Oriental language of course, the best tale I could with regard to the fort. Sir, said I, to answer your last question first, that dreadful Gujpat I have seen, and he is alive. He is 8 feet, nearly, in height. He can eat a bullock daily, of which he has 700 at present in the compound, and swears that during the siege he will content himself with only 3 a week. He has lost in battle his left eye, and what is the consequence? O Ramgunj, O thou with the eye as bright as morning, and with beard as black as night, Galaya Gujpat I never sleeps. Ah, you Gurumsog, you thief of the world, said the Prince Vizier, Sadadali Begbimbakchi, tis joking you are. And there was a universal buzz through the room at the announcement of this bouncer. By the 111 incarnations of Vishnu, said I, solemnly, an oath which no Indian was ever known to break. Swear that so it is. So at least he told me, and I have good cause to know his power. Gujpati is an enchanter. He is leagued with devils. He is invulnerable. Look, said I, unsheathing my dagger, and every eye turned instantly towards me. Thrice did I stab him with this steel in the back, once, twice, right through the heart. But he only laughed me to scorn, and bade me tell Holker that the steel was not yet forged which was to inflict an injury upon him. I never saw a man in such a rage as Holker was when I gave him this somewhat imprudent message. Ah, lily-livered rogue! Shouted he out to me, milk-blooded unbeliever! Pale-faced miscreant! Lives he after insulting thy master in thy presence! In the name of the Prophet, I spit on thee, defy thee, abhor thee, degrade thee. Take that, thou liar of the universe. And that and that and that. Such are the frightful excesses of barbaric minds. Every time this old man said, take that, he flung some article near him at the head of the undaunted Gahagan, his dagger, his sword, his carbine, his richly ornamented pistols, his turban covered with jewels, worth 100,000 crores of rupees finally, his hookah, snake mouthpiece, silver bell, chillum, and all which went hissing over my head, and flattening into a jelly the nose of the Grand Vizier. Yakmazi, my nose is off, said the old man, mildly. Will you have my life, O Holker? It is thine likewise. And no other word of complaint escaped his lips. Of all these missiles, though a pistol and carbine had gone off as the ferocious Indian flung them at my head, and the naked scimitar fiercely but unadroitly thrown, had lopped off the limbs of one or two of the musnuds as they sat trembling on their amras, yet, strange to say, not a single weapon had hurt me. When the hubbub ceased, and the unlucky wretches who had been the victims of this fit of rage had been removed, Holker's good humor somewhat returned, and he allowed me to continue my account of the fort, which I did, not taking the slightest notice of his burst of impatience. As indeed it would have been the height of impoliteness to have done, for such accidents happened many times in the day. It is well that the Babaji has returned, snuffled out the poor Grand Vizier, after I had explained to the council the extraordinary means of defense possessed by the garrison. Our star is bright, O Bahadur! For this very night we had resolved upon an escalade of the fort, and we had sworn to put every one of the infidel garrison to the edge of the sword. But you have no battering train, said I. Bah, we have a couple of 96-pounders. Quite sufficient to blow the gates open, and then, hey for a charge, said Lowell. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.